This is VFR Kature and you're listening to WPXC Accra 98.7 FM.
You are invited to join me upon the Cypress Bow. Music from North Africa, West and Central Asia. First Monday of every month, 8 to 10 p.m. on WGXC 90.7 FM. And WGXC.org.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Ralph Gartner of Valencia, New York. WGXC supporters care deeply about creative community radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You, too, can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
Hi, everyone. It's Lily, the youth peer leader from Mental Health Association of Columbia Green County's Clubhouse. Are you a teen wanting to learn more about health education? Maybe you're looking to complete your volunteer hours or in need of a job. The weekly teen clinic on Wednesdays from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. at Family Planning, located on the third floor of the county building on Main Street in Catskill, can help you answer any of your questions. Information can be found at greengovernment.com. Hope to see you there.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Friday, January 16th. Local early morning temperatures range from 8 degrees in Tannersville to 17 degrees in Red Hook. Regional average soil temperature is 36 degrees. Winds die down by 10 a.m. Skies will get a little bit cloudier, but be mostly sunny anyway. A high of 31 happens at 3 p.m. You may wish to use the nice weather to get something done if you catch my drift. Overnight, temperatures dip to 26 degrees, and by sunup, the white stuff returns. Tomorrow, light, regular snowfall is expected all day long. About a half inch to an inch as it should land by dark. Snow comes to an end by 8 p.m., and we get a low of 25 degrees. Sunday is mostly cloudy with a high of 34. We may get a light dusting in the afternoon. Monday, we'll have a high of 32, and we will get another dusting. Sunset today will be at 4:34 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 7:16 a.m. Looking way up, we see our flying rock has entered an area of boosted plasma speeds. As such, winds are blowing by at 671 kilometers per second with a thin density of 1 proton per cubic centimeter. X-class flare chances are at 1%. Radio propagation conditions are currently being impacted above 24 megahertz with a level 3 noise floor. The highest I've ever seen it is 20, so that's not too bad. There are no chances of aurora this evening. The current sunspot number is 123. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Welcome to 2026 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
The president's Truth Social post spoke very loud and clear to Democrats across this country, elected officials who are encouraging left-wing agitators to unlawfully obstruct legitimate law enforcement operations.
White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt is defending President Donald Trump's threat to invoke the Insurrection Act, saying multiple past presidents have done so. Trump threatened to invoke the 1807 law, meant to use military personnel to restore civil order, following a second shooting by an ICE officer in Minneapolis. Traditionally, presidents invoke the law at the request of governors or mayors. President John Kennedy used it to enforce court-ordered desegregation. President Bill Clinton used it when called on by the governor of California during riots after the beating of Rodney King. Ryan LaRochelle at the University of Maine says sending troops over the objections of local officials would escalate the conflict and would quickly be challenged in court.
What we're seeing here, again, is a dramatic break from precedent to use the Insurrection Act to stomp down on lawful protests and is quite worrisome to me.
The shooting of a Venezuelan migrant in the leg has further inflamed the nationwide protests that followed the killing of Renee Nicole Good. Minnesotans are also objecting to the aggressive ICE tactics in local government meetings. Birgit Johnson now lives in Richfield, Minnesota. She told the city council there that the local police should not cooperate with ICE and says the mass immigration raids remind her of the Nazi history of her native Germany.
What I have been seeing lately is immigration enforcement that has adopted a military look and operation style that imposes warlike methods on the people.
ICE Deputy Director Madison Shahan is running for Congress, challenging Marcy Kaptur in her Northwest Ohio district. Kaptur is the longest-serving woman in the House and has staved off multiple challenges by Trump-endorsed candidates. Keegan Zimmerman with the Kaptur campaign says her constituents know and approve of her record, even as Ohio lawmakers drew the district's lines to favor the GOP.
While Republicans from near and far will fight through a messy primary in this district, they gerrymandered again just this fall.
A Reuters poll found only 17% of Americans support taking Greenland, and just 4% support using military force to do it. As Trump continues to threaten annexation of the Danish territory, several Senate Republicans say they might move to block that, and they'll meet with NATO allies to reassure them. Federal courts yesterday delivered major wins for advocates of voter privacy. Two federal judges struck down attempts by the White House to access private voter registration data from Oregon and California. A new Texas Senate Democratic primary poll finds State Representative James Tallarico ahead of Congresswoman Jasmine Crockett by 9 points. Tallarico, a Presbyterian seminary student, saw his star rise in the party with his faith-based progressive politics, while Crockett built a large social media following in part by voicing disdain for Trump. I'm Simone Perez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
I got her record, you got my heart, I got your letters, all signed with blood, I got your buddy, me and my buddy.
Daily Yonder and Public News Service, this is the news from rural America. The rush to build AI data centers has come to rural central Appalachia, where the demise of coal mining has flatlined the economy. The tech industry, data center developers, and fossil fuel companies are eyeing the landscape with ambitious plans to power the growth of artificial intelligence. Daily Yonder contributor James Branscombe says it sparked both hope and resistance.
Pro-development people are saying this is an awesome opportunity for us. These data centers are going to pay property taxes. They're going to employ a lot of people. It's going to finally bring prosperity.
Critics warn of environmental degradation, soaring utility bills, limited job creation, and the loss of local control. Branscombe says community groups fear governments are railroading projects through in spite of their impacts.
These folks are objecting to the water usage, they're objecting to the electricity usage, they're objecting to the noise these things make.
Global trade wars from President Donald Trump's tariffs have driven down farm commodity prices. Now, as Susanna Brown reports, farmers await a promised bailout.
A Chinese boycott of U.S. soybeans left farmers without a vital market for most of last year. That was devastating for South Dakota row crop farmer Gene Staley.
Tariffs, regardless of who puts them on, are really hard on agriculture. Any time they start using my commodity as some sort of leverage, some sort of weapon, I'm the one that suffers, and this time is no different.
To ease the pain, USDA is paying $12 billion to barley, corn, soybean, and wheat farmers. They expect one-time payments between $30 and $45 per acre next month. Staley says it won't cover his losses or fix the underlying problems.
It'll help, but it won't make me whole.
I'm Susanna Brown.
There's a child care shortage in rural America. With no new federal funding or comprehensive reform on the horizon, states are trying novel solutions, from cutting costs to voluntary donations. Britton Stites is city attorney for Junction City, Kansas. He says conflicting state, city, and county ordinances can hamstring potential providers.
You always want policy and practice to meet, but sometimes the policy has to change to meet the practice.
In Alaska, certified home-based providers are critical for rural communities, but getting a license can be challenging. And in areas where homes lack reliable internet, many providers may have to travel hundreds of miles several times a year at their own expense to complete the necessary coursework. Stephanie Berglund leads THREAD, Alaska's Child Care Resource and Referral Network. She says they're trying to speed up caregivers' licensing.
More and more communities are using the satellite internet, opening up a lot of access, especially to professional development in rural and remote Alaska.
For the Daily Yonder and Public News Service, I'm Roz Brown. For more rural stories, visit DailyYonder.com.
Let us go to the city where my cup runneth over like a chocolate fountain, where the buildings shine like the eyes of heaven, and the people on the street are looking for love, and we're guaranteed to find it. Let us go, let us go. If you'll be my girlfriend, I shall not want for anything. You'll make me to lie down in your bed. You'll lead me to green pastures, and you'll always keep me fed. If you'll be my girlfriend, you shall not want for anything. Though we be in the shadow of death, with the oil of love anointing every hair upon your head. Shall not want for anything. There'll be no cause to fight nor to be
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government buy-in for the people. January 14th, a Ninth Circuit federal court panel rejected a GOP claim that California's new congressional districts were racially gerrymandered. The court said the Proposition 50 maps, created as a counterpunch to gerrymandering in Texas, were manipulated for partisan, not racial reasons. Governor Gavin Newsom proposed a suspension of California's independent redistricting rules, with 65% of voters later passing Proposition 50 last November. The legislature, using an outside consultant, manipulated the map to flip as many as 5 congressional seats to Democrats. Republicans argued racial data was unconstitutionally used to create the districts. In a 2-1 decision, the majority wrote, "Because we find that the evidence of any racial motivation driving redistricting is exceptionally weak, while the evidence of partisan motivations is overwhelming, challengers are not entitled to preliminary relief on any of their claims," unquote. In Texas, the U.S. Supreme Court also decided it was partisan, not racial gerrymandering, allowing the manipulated map to stand. But it also invoked the Purcell principle, suggesting it was too close to the Texas primary and blocking the map would create confusion. It's likely the Proposition 50 case will also be appealed, and a politicized U.S. Supreme Court majority could use Purcell to block California's 5 additional Democratic seats. I'm Brian Beal.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1865. That was the day General William T. Sherman issued Field Order No. 15. The order sought to redistribute 400,000 acres of land to freed blacks in 40-acre tracts. The area stretched from Charleston, South Carolina to Jacksonville, Florida, from the Atlantic Ocean to 30 miles inland. It also included many coastal islands, as well as Georgia's Sea Islands. Coming on the heels of Sherman's march to the sea, the order was issued from Savannah, Georgia. 4 days earlier, Sherman had met with 20 black ministers and the Secretary of War, Edwin Stanton. Sherman and Stanton asked the group a series of questions. How did they understand slavery, and what did freedom mean to them? When asked what the freedmen wanted most, Garrison Frazier, the group spokesman, replied land. And when asked whether they would prefer to live among whites or not, they replied no, as the prejudice of whites would take years to overcome. The order provided for the immediate settlement of black refugees on confiscated land. Land redistribution to former slaves was radical policy to break the economic power of the Confederacy, punish South Carolina for starting the war, and begin to consolidate a new class of agricultural laborers. The land titles were possessory, however, and contingent upon the Freedmen's Bureau to award permanent titles. President Andrew Johnson moved quickly in the wake of Lincoln's assassination to overturn Field Order No. 15. Within a year, it would be reversed and confiscated lands would be returned to newly pardoned Confederates and plantation owners. The overturning of the order and later of Reconstruction would lay the basis for a new type of slavery, that of sharecropping, debt peonage, and contract labor. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and the Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to LaborHistoryIn2.com.
Smoke-filled room. time now for your good news for a good planet. Good News, Good Planet Schools. Good News, Good Planet first aired on KNCE Truth House Radio in April of 2015. By 2022, over 600 stories had been recorded, and a new chapter emerged when those stories began transforming the lives of young people. The Good News, Good Planet Schools curriculum is designed for 6th to 12th grades and uses these award-winning stories to show kids that they have the power to make their own lives and the lives of others better. Students choose audios and scripts from four categories: animals, earth, inventions, and people. They respond to those stories in a myriad of ways, and after engaging in so much good news, the program then asks, "What would you change?" GNGP Schools then teaches the executive skills that will guide them to getting it done. Students design and implement service learning projects that actually make a difference on issues that matter to them. And teachers benefit too, as students are empowered to teach themselves as they experience the joy of accomplishment. This extraordinary program is an antidote to the growing wave of apathy that so many young people are experiencing, and instead instills the lifelong knowledge of how good it feels to do good for others. And this is Mandy from Good News, Good Planet.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizerwitz, and this is Climate Connections. A program in New York City is helping train people for jobs in energy efficiency and changing their lives.
It gives people hope, and it gives people opportunity that they might not feel like they had.
Munir Smith graduated from the nonprofit Stacks and Jewels Building Automation Training Program. It's run in partnership with Henry Street Settlement, a social service agency on Manhattan's Lower East Side. Trainees learn how to install and operate technology that automates a building's lights and HVAC equipment, which can save a lot of energy. Michael Conway, co-founder of Stacks and Jewels, says the program goes beyond teaching skills. It also provides comprehensive support to students, some of whom struggle with poverty or homelessness.
If housing comes up, there's access to support there. If there's food or nutritional requirements, if there's transportation, if they need eyeglasses, if they need, you know, clothes that are appropriate for interviews.
So by helping trainees overcome barriers, the program provides a path to well-paying careers in energy efficiency.
And so, you know, I'm always looking at my classmates achieve great things. So it's a proud fraternity to be in.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
You have the already global networks. So my argument is very simple. The present media is too large and wasteful. From now on, we should think about the more smaller media to diverse our culture and community. I have different idea on airwave. Airwave belong to the every people, everybody, not to the states or a government. Okay, I will make the transmitter now.